The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 134, Thursday, 6th December, 2007. Show with tech.co.uk. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show is Andrew Edney, author of Using Windows Home Server, a new book on Windows Home Server. Andrew is also the author of books on Media Center and other topics, and we're talking about his book Windows Home Server and Windows Media Center. I have an update on the Media Center Show Awards, news, and a copy of Andrew's book to give away. Welcome to the show, good to have you along. First, to an update on the Media Center Show Awards. Thanks to everyone that's voted so far. Head over to the voting page if you've not voted, awards.thedigitallifestyle.com. Have your say. The aim of the awards is to highlight the great work done by the Media Centre community, development and the enthusiast websites. I've got some nice prizes lined up for voting. All you have to do to be eligible for the prize draw is to leave your email address when you vote. And I've got from Embedded Automation a full copy of M-Control, the home automation software. And that was nominated for Best Commercial Application. And also nominated for Best Commercial Application was One Voice Media Center Communicator. And I'll be giving a full copy of that away. And I'll be giving away a Vidabox remote keyboard. This is a great keyboard that for Media Center that's wireless, uses a USB dongle, and it's a really nice solution for Media Center. And I did a video review of that a few shows back, and a link for that in the show notes, so you could have got a chance of winning that as well. So I'll just leave your email address when you vote, and I'll draw a winner at random, or winners at random. Do you find yourself checking your Media Center to make sure all your programs have been recorded? Or have you ever looked at your Media Center log file wondering what's going on, how your system's performing? Well, I do, and especially since having a problem with a file corruption, with a recordings file corruption that stopped things recording, I've always checking to make sure everything's running okay, and I mean, normally it does, but it's nice to be able to check. So I've written an application specifically to monitor Media Center called Media Center Health Monitor, and it's an application that monitors your Media Center, looks at things like recorded TV success or failures. So it'll tell you if a program's recorded because, or has, if a program hasn't recorded because the PC was off or it started late. Or there was a conflict, or everything recorded okay. It'll also tell you about things like disk space utilization. So if there was if you can set a threshold, and it will warn you about that. It'll also tell you if any services are not running. And so if you want to have a play with the application, it's in beta at the moment. Just send me an email to beta@thedigitallifestyle.com, and you'll get a link back with full download instructions. And you can get trying the application. I really do want to hear your feedback, what you'd like to get from the application, what you think it should do. I've got some interesting ideas to develop it further, such as a native Media Center interface, which I'm working at the moment, and maybe a remote version for monitoring multiple machines, or maybe some kind of web service, who knows. So send your feedback and your beta request to beta@thedigitallifestyle.com and let me know how you get on with it. Now to some other news items. Engadget have details of Rika Vision's new Universal Media Center Sideshow remote. A very nice looking remote with a 2.4-inch QVGA LCD with the Media Center green button and Sideshow functionality. So this has got, you'll be able to queue up music and all the gadgets, get email and all, you know, the communication between your PC and the remote control. So it's an intelligent remote control. It's got Blu-ray and infrared and other things. It's a very nice looking remote, $274, so it's not cheap, and they're available in February, and hopefully you'll get to look at those, because they're one of the interesting things on show this January at CES, the Rika Vision Sideshow remotes. So hopefully we'll see those at CES this coming January. And I'll be at CES in January, getting all the Media Centre show news. So if there's anything you think I should be looking at, and or if you're attending and like to meet up, get a quick chat, maybe a quick interview, you can get in touch at ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'll be there for quite a few days trying to get all the news, so let me know if there's something I should be looking at. Now, a piece of good news for Xbox Live users in the UK. In the US, you've had the video download service for a while, but it looks like it's finally coming to the UK December 11th, I heard. This will be offering movies to download via your Xbox, via Xbox Live in HD and standard definition, which you pay for by your Xbox Live points. And I think they're looking at something like £3.20 for a HD movie and £2 something for a standard definition. I think it's really good that the service is coming to the UK. I'm not sure about the pricing. I mean, it's I suppose it is quite expensive, but it's about in line with what you would rent a DVD or a Blockbuster for. And obviously having the convenience of it just coming down to your Xbox is great. And I think I'm going to give it a try. Rather than going renting a movie, I'll do it this way. I still think that broadband speeds are going to improve for it to work really well. I guess I'm going to have to plan in advance what I'm going to watch. But hopefully it works well for me. And it might mean that, you know, we can kind of skip the HD, DVD or Blu-ray argument and just go straight for downloads. But we'll have to wait and see. I found that I'm looking for more interviews to do with the real world feature that we did a few shows back now. This is where I'd like to talk to real users about how you're using Media Center and how it fits in with your lifestyle. All I want to do is basically talk to the user. So drop me an email, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'll give you a quick phone call or Skype chat and we'll just record that and put it on the show. It could be 5 minutes, half an hour. I just really want to get a feel for how you're enthusiastic getting on with Media Center. So if you're interested, drop me an email and we'll work something out. Right, now time for a break and a message from One Voice, and I'll be back with Andrew Edney and a chance to win a copy of his book.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on One Voice's Media Center Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. One Voice offers licenses for MCE speech tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Andrew Edney, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And we're going to be talking today Windows Home Server. Obviously, we know we talk about Media Center, but Windows Home Server fits so nicely in the world of Media Center. I thought we'd talk Home Server today, and the reason we've got you on is you've got a new book coming out on Windows Home Server. So before we dive too much into that area, just give us a background on you and so how you got into writing.
Sure. Well, I've been in IT now for about 12 or 13 years. I've worked for companies like HP, Fujitsu, Microsoft, all sorts of people like that, doing things ranging from consulting to support, that sort of interesting thing. So I like playing around with new technology. I've been involved for a number of years on the various Microsoft beta programs, including all the versions of Windows Media Center. As you know, from the Media Center book that was written a while ago by myself and Tony Campbell. And I decided to get writing. It was actually Tony's idea to get me involved in a book he was doing. And I found that it was, quite enjoyable, really, got a kick out of seeing the book on the shelf. And it's really good to be able to help other people when you've been playing around with a product for months and months and months. You just sort of little things you pick up and you want to tell people all about them. So when Windows Home Server came out in beta, it was something I was kind of interested in. And thought, actually, it'd be quite an idea to get a book out there on this. And that's pretty much where we are now.
And so when you started with with Windows Home Server? What was it that sort of the initial thing that gave you that buzz feeling to think, you know, this is something that I'd like to spend some time writing a book on?
Yeah, well, basically, I was very impressed by how easy it was to actually use. Now, I know that sounds a bit strange to say that and write a book on it, but it's very, very intuitive software. And the thing that really, to me, that made it the bit of software that I wanted to have is the backup and restore functionality. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about some of the functions in a moment, but that was the thing for me that was absolutely the killer. If it only did that function, I was going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, so talk us through the backup side of it then. Regulators will have heard me talk about this with other guests on the show, but in case anybody's not, what makes the backup features on this so compelling?
Well, a number of things, really. You don't have to do anything once it's set up, which I quite like, because even though I've been in IT for many, many years, I can't be bothered to do backups on occasion. I keep saying I'm going to do it, and then I don't bother, or I can't be bothered to change the tapes or anything like that. I mean, we've all done it. And then, of course, you lose a disk in your server or in your machine at home. All your data's gone, and you sit there and go, well, I was going to back it up today. And obviously, that's a bit of a problem. So the way that one of the really nice features about this, you set it up for the first time, you configure whichever machines that you want it to back up, and basically all you got to do is make sure that the machines are switched on. And basically, Windows Server will connect to that machine, will look at the previous backup it's already done of your machine, and only back up the changes. So rather than every time backing up your entire hard disk or your entire data store, it just looks and says, what has changed since the last time I did a backup, and only back that up.
And I think probably this is one of the first products that I've actually ever really used with backups and at home anyway, and been totally happy that everything is backed up and retrieving it is not a chore either.
No, it's very nice actually. You've got two different options for retrieving backups. You can either open up the backup and pull an individual file or a number of files with simple ease, to be honest. There's no restoring of a tape or a disk or anything like that, like people might be used to doing. It effectively just opens up a file explorer window. You crawl down to wherever file or files you want. You can copy and paste, and that's obviously for recovering small amounts of files. But to be honest, for me, the absolute killer part of this application is if your entire machine drops dead, you can actually recover it from the restore CD by just basically plugging in a CD, rebooting the machine. It will connect to your home server. You effectively select the backup that you want to restore to your machine, sit back, wait 15, 20 minutes later, you've got your entire machine restored.
That's superb, isn't it? And that's, and like you said, that is definitely one of the killer features, because if your hard disk goes, it's not just recovering your data, but it's just a pain having to reinstall all your applications. Even if you've got a good backup of your files, your personal files and folders, getting Windows back to the state it was before the hard disk went is such a pain that this is so much easier.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, your average time for restoring or rebuilding a machine, either XP or Vista, you're talking an hour or so to get the initial operating system on, several hours to do all of your updates and securities and fixes and patches. Then you've got all your applications. Then on top of that, you've then got to obviously put your data back on. Whereas with this, 15, 20 minutes, you've got everything back exactly as it was at the point you backed it up. And it works. It works really well.
I mean, this is one of the areas that I've never actually tested, because, touch wood, luckily, I've not had a hard disk go. I've used the individual file restore, but I've not used the full recovery. So I guess during the process of the book, this is one of the things you've got to do. So how did you find that whole process?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's very, very simple. Literally, I decided, obviously, I didn't have a hard drive failure, but because of writing the book, I thought, well, I need to work through the steps. So let's deliberately cause a problem and just start the restore process. So literally, imagine your machine was completely dead, you've popped in a new hard drive, you start the machine up with the restore CD, you get a nice usual sort of Windows Vista GUI that basically says it's detected some hardware, do you want to install any additional drivers? Now, for the most part, you probably won't need to do that, because the drivers will probably be on the machine already. So that you then click through a few screens, it says to you, it's picked up what it thinks is the machine that you're trying to restore to, but if not, you can obviously pick from a drop-down list. So obviously the one thing to make sure is that you do actually recover the correct image to your machine. Don't try restoring another image because things can go a bit wrong. And then you've got options to play around with the with different drives if you've got multiple drives. And then you just click go, and effectively you just wait until it's all finished. And as I say, I restored, in fact, this morning to my MacBook Pro a Vista image, and it took about 17 minutes.
Would that then work if, say, you know, you've got a 500 gig drive that's failed on your main machine, and you put in a terabyte one there because you want to up storage? How's that going to cope then when you bring the image back down that was originally from a 500 gig image?
I'll be honest, I've not actually tried that, but I know a number of people on the forums, the Windows Home Server forums, have used it to actually change disks. And I believe as long as you actually have a disk that's larger, you should be okay. Although I would recommend trying that before you you rely on it too much. Obviously, the problem is going to be if you try to restore to a smaller disk.
Yeah, yeah. But just one of the problems you would have had in the past with sort of ghost images and things like that is if you're mismatching the disk sizes, then you could potentially have a problem. But if you, because you generally, if you buy a new disk, you go to a bigger disk anyway, and then so that would be a nice way of being able to increase your disk space without having to add extra drive letters or partitions and using sort of special tools to get all that sorted out.
Absolutely, and obviously if it then turns out not to work for whatever reason, you pop your old disk back in and you've not really lost anything.
Mm. So these are scenarios that you kind of, you don't really test very often because you never go through that whole clean wipe sort of installation. But I noticed one of the things when you get a new machine, of course, you can use Home Server to do a full backup, and you've also got a clean image of your machine at sort of day one, which is often something you want to restore back to at a later date in the future when Windows sort of slows down, when it's full of all of the rubbish that you install over a period of time.
Absolutely, and obviously the way that Windows backup works is if you've got, let's say you've got 3 or 4 XP machines or 3 or 4 Vista machines at home, it doesn't actually back up all 4 completely. What it does is it has a look and says, well, actually, this is the same Vista Ultimate Edition on all 4 machines, so I only need to back up Vista Ultimate, all of those files, once, and I'll just back up all the deltas and put all the points in the backup, so that if you do want to do a restore, I'll just go and find the relevant parts and recover it to your machine using single instance storage. So it's great because it means you don't have to effectively blow away loads of storage space on your Windows Home Server just to back up multiple gigabytes of operating systems.
Mm. And the other feature, the restore feature that I have used, is the single file restore. And you mentioned before that's really simple. So just talk us through how you would say you wanted to pick out a Word document or a photo from a backup you did last Thursday. Is it easy to pick that file out?
Absolutely. All you need to do is you go into the Windows Home Server console, which is obviously an application that you can install onto any of your client PCs, or even if you really wanted to, you could run it from the Windows Home Server itself. But obviously, the idea of Windows Home Server is that it's a headless unit with no keyboard, no mouse, no monitor, and you've got it tucked away under the stairs. So that might be a bit difficult for some people. So the console really is the place to do everything. So you just click on the Computers and Backups tab, select the actual machine from the list of machine names, just effectively double-click on that machine name. That will bring up a list of all of the backups for that machine. Then all you'd actually need to do is select the backup you want, and at the bottom of the window, you get one called Restore or View Files From, and it will give you the date that the actual backup was done. And all you do is click the Open button. That will effectively go and connect to the Windows Home Server, open up the backup, and effectively it will show it in a File Explorer view, and you can just effectively go through the files until you can actually find what you want. And then you can just you can do a copy and paste directly onto your desktop or anywhere else where you particularly want those files. And obviously the nice thing about this is, unlike the full computer restore, you can have your XP machine that's got some data on and your Vista machine that's got some data on, but you could open the XP backup on the Vista machine to copy the data off. You don't have to open the backup on the same machine if you just want to do individual file restores.
I found that really handy to save sort of, you know, booting a machine up. If you just want to pick out a particular file, you don't have to go and find the machine and power it up and get it on the, you know, get it on the network and everything else. You can just use the home server to get it off the file. So I find it even more convenient, for not even necessarily restoring it because I need it, just because I can't be bothered to go and get it off the other machine.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And obviously the idea of this particular product is that you've got a Windows Home Server somewhere in your house, you've got multiple machines, so you could have a machine in your office, a machine in your living room, a machine in the kids' room or kids' rooms. And as you say, you don't want to be walking around each of the different machines in the house just to recover something, pop tapes in or discs. So it's really, really useful.
And I must admit, that is one of the nice features. And in terms of where you've positioned your home server, since you've been writing the book, and have you found sort of the best way to connect it up to the network, and have you found some good routers that work well with it and that kind of thing?
I mean, personally, Microsoft say that you really shouldn't run it wireless, and I think, to be honest, that's a good suggestion, because the amount of data that's flowing between it wireless can be a bit flaky at times, as we all know. So really, they recommend, or the requirement, as they say, is to do it wired. So if you've got a gigabit network at home, for example, you're obviously well suited for Windows Home Server. It works fine on 100 meg. It's no problem. Router-wise, I've had no problem using it here in the UK with BT Home Hub. A lot of other people have talked about Linksys routers on the forums that they've used. So far, it doesn't seem to be much of an issue with what networking kit you use, as long as you sort of follow the guidelines, which is basically have your Windows Home Server wired rather than wireless, and you have it connected to the fastest network connection you've got.
I mean, it just seemed to be a pretty sort of low maintenance product. In fact, you just kind of, especially the headless units, you just plug them in and then you go and install your console on your other machines, and it's ready to go. There's not a great deal of work you have to do with it.
No, absolutely not. I mean, obviously, it depends what you want to do with it. I mean, the majority of people, I would imagine, that Microsoft are targeting with this product will effectively have it sitting under the stairs or in a cupboard or at the back of the room somewhere quietly, and pretty much never look at it and go, oh, I wonder what that is. Oh, I remember, that's my Windows Home Server. And because it's a headless unit and because of the devices that are coming out pre-installed with software are very, very tiny, that it's great. You just have it sitting in the corner somewhere and you won't have to worry. I mean, one of the things that when you say to people Windows Home Server, they have this look of shock and horror on their face, because they assume that you're talking about some giant computer that's going to sit there making a really loud noise in their office or in their front room, when in fact you're talking about a very small device that could effectively, depending on the types of disks you're using, for example, be very, very quiet.
The other features that sort of mentioned about Home Server, it's got file sharing, remote access, and sort of media sharing. What was your sort of the next favourite feature after the backup?
I actually quite like the remote access side of things. I found it very easy to set up and use. I know a lot of people have been having problems because you need to set up port forwarding on your router, and you have to open three particular ports, and also your ISP obviously needs to not block those particular ports. Now, here in the UK, we don't tend to have too many problems that I'm aware of with our ISPs blocking ports. For example, whereas from looking at the Windows Home Server forums and some of the questions, in the US it seems to be quite an issue with people blocking ports. Now, remote access, very, very simple to set up. So effectively you can give access to your Windows Home Server to anyone in your family or friends, give them access to shared folders, allow them to browse and even upload files to your Windows Home Server when you're out of the home. You can also do this yourself. So instead of having to take a hard disk, a portable hard disk with you if you're out the office at work or on holiday somewhere, and let's be honest, we IT people do tend to do that on occasion, you can actually connect remotely anywhere in the world to your Windows Home Server and access your data and upload it. But on top of that, if you wanted to access remotely any of your other computers on the network, as long as they're supported, you can actually take control of the computers on your network through the Windows Home Server remote access webpage, which, to be honest, is quite nice.
And that doesn't need any special configuration on the remote machine. So if I have my Vista Media Center PC and I want to be able to get onto that from through the web from the office, all the configuration is done on Home Server, and you don't have to do anything on the Vista machine.
All you need to do on the client machine is enable remote access. Because
right.
Usually by default, remote access is switched off. So just enable remote access, and as long as it's one of the supported operating systems, you should have no problems. You can connect to it. You can use it exactly as though you would do if you were doing normal remote access, if you've ever done remote access using the RDP client.
Right, and you say supported platforms. So what are the supported platforms?
What I put in the book was Windows Home Server Remote Access only works on Windows XP Professional, Windows XP Tablet Edition, and Windows Media Center 2005.
Right.
That's for XP. And for Windows Vista, Windows Server Remote Access for Windows Vista works only on Windows Vista Ultimate, Business and Enterprise editions. If you're using any other version of Windows, it won't work.
Of course, you're not going to be able to use it on Home Premium because there's no remote desktop support on Home Premium, is there?
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a lot of talk on the forums with people complaining, saying that it's a home server product and it should support all versions of home software. But it's obviously out of the hands of the Windows Home Server team. This is purely in the realms of the Vista team. If they support remote desktop, then Windows Home Server will connect to it. So in the future, if they do decide to enable remote desktop on versions of the operating system with service packs later on, perhaps Windows Home Server should support it.
Right, okay. But it's a nice feature, it's nice to have, but I think one of the things I liked about it was the fact that you can access the shared folders remotely. So like you mentioned earlier on, you can upload and download things from those folders. So anything that you're going to want when you're out and about, I tend to make sure it's always on one of the shared folders so that if I need it, I can go and grab it.
Absolutely, and it's a very good feature to have.
And talk about the shared folders then. How does the shared folders work? Because in the past, enthusiasts have come up, tried, you know, installing domains and Server 2000, Server 2003, and Linux shares. And how do you, how shared folders and the whole sort of security thing tie together?
It's very simple within Windows Home Server. Again, basically, you use the Windows Home Server console, which is the application for doing everything on Windows Home Server. There's a special tab called Shared Folders. And effectively, if you wanted to create a new shared folder, it's very simple. You just click Add. You type the name of your shared folder. You can choose whether or not you want what's called folder duplication, which basically, if you've got more than one hard drive in your machine, you can enable folder duplication in order to keep a copy in both or over multiple hard drives. So in the event of a hard drive failure on the Windows Home Server, your data's safe. But obviously, folder duplication requires more than one hard drive. So if you've only got one hard drive in your Windows Home Server, you won't be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And as I say, you create the folder, name it, choose duplication. You then get a list of all of the users' accounts that you've actually created, and you can effectively set permissions on them. You've got an option between full permissions, which obviously enables you to read and write and delete, etc. You've got the read permission, which basically users can just read what's in the folder and copy things off. Or you could say none, which basically means they don't get any. And as soon as you click finish, Windows Home Server goes away and does all of the work for you, creates the folder, sets the permissions, and if you're using duplication, sets the duplication. And obviously, if you want to go in later on and change any of those permissions, you can just double-click on the folder, click on the User Access tab, and again, you get the same list of user accounts, and again, radio buttons that say full, read, or none per user, and you can quickly go and change it like that. No more do you have to go in, look at permissions, choose user accounts, inherit permissions from upper folders, anything like that that people are used to if they're in a domain environment. This is very, very simple.
But that's what you want, isn't it? Because that's one of the things that's always fiddly to set up on your home network is the folder permissions and the share permissions. But going back to the user accounts then, you've got three or four people on your network and you've created user accounts for them. How is that then synchronized so that I've got a user account Ian on my tablet and I've got a user account Ian on my Media Center PC, perhaps with different passwords, but then Home Server, I would create my user account Ian. How can I tie those together?
Well, Windows Home Server, when you've installed the Windows Home Server connector on the client PCs, you get an option called Update Password. Now, if you've not used the same user account and password, or use a different password rather, Windows Home Server gives you a nice little dialog box that tells you that it doesn't recognize your password or that it doesn't match the password on your home server. Now, obviously, you don't need to have it synchronized. If you're quite happy to, every time you want to access something, you type in a password, you might be want that extra layer of security, that's fine, it will work, okay. But if you want to be able to easily just double-click on the shared folder icon and go into anything, you really want your password to be synchronized. Now, what you can do is you can just click this Update Password button on the Windows Home Server console tray icon in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen, and it basically says you can update your password. And when you choose that, you have two options. You can either keep the password that's on your client computer and update your Windows Home Server password, or you can keep the Windows Home Server password and update the one on your computer. Either way, Windows Home Server does it all for you. It just asks you to choose which of those two options and then enter the passwords and then click OK, and it will do it all for you.
So that's all your passwords synchronized sort of from one place then?
Yeah, absolutely. So rather than, again, than having to worry about I've got different accounts here, different accounts there, you can have Windows Home Server basically take care of everything for you.
I mean, it does kind of fulfil the role then of it's not just backups and it's not just remote access, it's also doing the shared folder and the sort of all the things that you'd need once you start getting more than one PC in a house, all the things you kind of need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Microsoft, when they developed this product, obviously they didn't have people in mind for this that were IT administrators or experts as their core audience, effectively. They were looking at the people at home that have got a couple of computers but don't back it up because they think it's a bit complicated, don't really share data across their home network because, again, it's complicated. So rather than having everybody sit around one computer to look at their family vacation pictures, you can effectively put it on the Windows Home Server. So everything's done with wizards. Everything's as simple as it can possibly be. So as I say, with the permissions, it's either full read or none, rather than granular permissions that some people might be used to in an enterprise environment.
The other area that's there and probably it doesn't get utilised as much as the backup and the remote access is the media sharing. So what does it do around media?
Oh, absolutely. You can actually stream media to non-Windows devices that support Windows Media Connect or to devices such as your Xbox 360. Now, you've got a nice little option called media sharing within the Windows Home Server console, which effectively shares or streams out your music, photos and videos. But it only shares it from the three core folders that are created when you first install Windows Home Server, which is music, photos, and videos. Anything else, if you create your own folder called TV shows, for example, and you want to stream it, you can't do it using this particular function. You'd have to basically copy all that information into either music, photos, or videos. But it's very, very easy to set up. You click on the media sharing button within the settings, and effectively you've got two radio buttons for each of those three folders, basically on and off. So from your Windows Home Server to, I don't know, say your Xbox 360, you click the on button, click OK, and then when you go to your Xbox 360 and you go to the media blade and click computer, you should be able to see your Windows Home Server computer and effectively click on it and stream away as you would do normally if you've, say, using other computers with the Xbox.
That's a nice feature, and I think with the nature of Home Server being on all the time, then you can make good use of that for, you know, the Windows Media Connect devices. It just put all your content on there and then let those connect and stream the straight off the Home Server.
Absolutely. I mean, the only one thing to bear in mind, and again, this is something that appears to have come up quite a lot on the forums, is the device you're streaming to obviously has to support the content that you are actually streaming. So, I mean, anyone who's used for Media Center, for example, and their Xbox 360 knows that there might be some codecs that you've got on some of the files that you're storing on your Media Center, and in the same case, Windows Home Server, that the Xbox doesn't support. So you just got to remember that just because the Windows Home Server says it's streaming the content of that folder doesn't necessarily mean that all of the content in that folder can be streamed to the device. So it's just a little thing to bear in mind.
And I suppose if you wanted to do some transcoding, you need a third-party application like Orb or WebGuide or something like that.
Absolutely. And looking at some of the posts in the forums, again, Orb's used quite a lot. I believe people have been playing around with it. And again, people have got it working very well.
When you're going through the process of writing the book, obviously you've got to go through everything and go through the areas even that you may not necessarily use. Were there any features in there that surprised you that were there sort of kind of hidden away?
Not so much hidden away, but some of the features that I didn't think that I would necessarily be too bothered about, that after having done the book, I thought, well, this is quite neat. There's a section or a set of facilities called add-ins. Now, what this does is basically makes your Windows Home Server very extensible, so you can effectively get additional software that's specifically written for Windows Home Server and actually add it into your Windows Home Server. So, for example, it might be an antivirus application. It might be a home control application like the M-Control product, the home automation stuff that we're all used to seeing on Media Center. For example, Microsoft now have released a Windows Home Server toolkit, which provides a number of utilities for tracking down problems with the remote access, database consistency problems, etc. And they're little nice things that can add in to your Windows Home Server and control it again all through the Windows Home Server console. Now, at the time I was looking, when I started the book, I thought, well, that's okay, but I probably won't use that very much. But since the beta's been going for 8-9 months, and obviously the product's now been out for a couple of months, lots of people have been coming up with add-ins, ranging from being able to post websites, to look at photos, to actually using some of the functionality we're all used to on Media Center, like looking at the TV list, guide listings, etc. So it's very, very extensible, very easy to use, and there's an SDK that people can download and develop applications for quite simply, and lots of people are doing that.
And so are there any personal favorites that you're using for the add-ins?
At the moment, the only thing I'm really using, I'll be honest, is the Windows Home Server Toolkit. I've played around with a lot of the add-ins, but the issue at the moment is that a lot of them, because the product's only just come out, a lot of the add-ins are still in beta. I am using the Avast antivirus, but that's not really so much an add-in as an additional piece of software that sits within the Windows Home Server console. But certainly there are lots of people using Wift for publishing websites, and there are plenty of applications out there that people can download.
And so the antivirus, when the product first came out, there wasn't really a lot of options on the antivirus. Do you think antivirus is something that you need to install on a home server, or if you've got the antivirus installed on your peripheral machines, do you really need it?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. I mean, this question comes up quite a lot on the forums as well, and to be honest, it's one of those great debates that there are people either on the side of absolutely you should have antivirus, or no, you don't need it because you're client computers. Personally, I believe that anywhere you're storing data or any machine that's connected to a network or the internet should have antivirus on to be safe. Now, the obvious issue at the moment is there aren't any antivirus applications that are specifically written to support Windows Home Server. The Avast product is actually in beta at the moment, and that's currently at beta 3, and obviously a number of the other antivirus vendors have said they will be releasing antivirus software. The one thing to be aware of at the moment is there are a number of people have put on their current antivirus products onto their Windows Home Server, and it's actually corrupted data because the antivirus product doesn't understand the way that Windows Home Server works with shared folders, with Drive Extender for pooling all of the storage. So be very careful what you use on your Windows Home Server. Make sure it's a product that is designed and supported for Windows Home Server. If you're not sure, check. Don't put it on.
And what was the one that you mentioned earlier, the one that you're using?
It's the Avast antivirus product. It's currently in beta 3. You can download it off of their website, and probably by the time this podcast goes out, it'll either be on beta 4 or it might even be out. They're certainly pushing it quite hard.
And that's just something you install on the home server, and can you install it through the connector rather than having to be on the home server itself? Or do you need to remote onto it?
I would suggest remoting onto it. I haven't checked if you can actually install it through the connector, but in my case, I actually had the machine sitting next to me at the time, so it was very simple for me to install it.
Yeah, because I guess there are going to be a lot of people with home servers that have got no user interface, so they've no keyboard, no mouse on the device. So would you recommend in that case then that you use like a remote desktop?
Yeah, absolutely. Use remote desktop to get you onto the server and install it that way. I would imagine, to be honest, that when the antivirus software comes out fully and finally, that there will be a way to install it through the connector, because that's obviously the way Microsoft is pushing the use of the product, everything through the connector. So I would imagine that people will write it through that.
Yeah. And when you're going through all the features, are there any things that you think were surprised that those features were left out and that you'd like to see in the next version?
Absolutely, there's a number of them, actually. Personally, there's no way to actually back up the Windows Home Server itself. That's very much missing functionality at the moment. Now, it's very simple to restore the home server. You just put your restore, your build DVD in, or if you're using one of the pre-built Windows Home Servers, it might be on a flash drive or another way, and effectively you just choose server reinstallation. It will rebuild everything. All your data should remain intact, but you'd have to recreate your users and re-permission your directories. So at the moment, that's it would have been nice to have. It's not the end of the world that it's not there, but again, it's a nice to have. And I know that originally Microsoft were talking about having a having something within the product, but they just didn't get time. Other things that would be nice, people have talked about wanting to have parental controls on the data, because obviously you're sharing everything out to people on your home network, and it might be that you don't particularly want certain things, certain like TV programs or films or anything you may have stored on there for your kids. Another one, which again, for me personally, there's a network health option within Windows Home Server, which basically monitors the health of your network, tells you if backups have failed, if patches are out of date, if antivirus is out of date, which is great, but that's all it does. It just tells you that it's out of date. Well, personally, what I would quite like is the ability to be able to click a button when it says that my XP machine is missing some patches, click the button and have that XP machine go away and pull down the patches, rather than me having to physically visit the XP machine, pull down the patches, and then go check the network health again.
Yeah, so if there was a way of the network health controlling the and doing a sort of a fix on it, so that, yeah, like you said, you don't have to then go around all the machines and do the repair.
Absolutely. I mean, that seemed to me like quite a good idea, because obviously one of the great things about this is that you can control everything, pretty much all your backups and everything, remotely through the console. But obviously there are certain things you can't do with the console, like visit the machine and actually install updates onto the actual clients themselves. You can do updates to your Windows Home Server through the console. That's great, so you don't have to obviously keep plugging things into your console. But the clients, there's just that little bit extra to go. But everyone's got to remember, it's version 1 product. If you want to see some new features in there, if you go to the Microsoft Connect website, connect.microsoft.com, you can actually now vote for any features that you'd like to see included in version 2. So you can add ideas, vote on other people's ideas. And Microsoft are listening, they are paying attention, and obviously the top ones will try and get resource put onto them in order to develop it for version 2. So if there's something you guys feel really, really strongly about seeing in the product that's missing at the moment, go vote for it now.
And what are the things that I know is missing that we've on the digitallifestyle.com we've kind of done a bit of work on, is to get recorded TV data onto Media Center. And there is no quick way of doing it, but through some of the guides that we've got on there, with Richard Miller's done on the forums now, we can do that. Why do you think that was not put in initially?
To be honest, that's a very good question. I would guess it's probably got something to do with the amount of time and amount of resource in order to get the product out. I mean, certainly Charlie Kindle, the guy at Microsoft who pretty much was the father of Windows Home Server, was obviously heavily involved in Media Center in the early days as well. So I know it's something that Microsoft would like to see in there, but I think it's just a case of limited amount of time to get the product out. And it's just one of those things that got missed off. But I would hope that in version 2, there is a lot more Media Center-like features, if you like, within Home Server. That would be very cool.
Yeah, because I think that's the one thing that's missing. It's kind of the joining everything together. There's things like Zoom players and Media Center, and to be able to have all that sort of connected, so that you've not got these separate systems and they are just sort of a one integrated system with all the different components around your network, then that's got to be the way forward.
Absolutely.
And one thing we haven't mentioned is the title of the book. So what's the title of the book?
It's the Windows Home Server User's Guide. A fairly simple title, to be honest, because that's pretty much what it is. It's designed to show people how to basically install Windows Home Server, how to configure it, how to get the best out of all of the different features. It's got some hints and tips and gotchas and warnings, the usual things that you effectively want to see in a book, are all included in this one.
And whereabouts would you find this book? Where's the best place jump onto Amazon?
If you jump onto Amazon and just do a search for Windows Home Server, you'll find the book. You can also go to the blog that I'm currently running, which is usingwindowshomeserver.com. And you can order the book from there, or you can basically hopefully go into any of your favourite bookshops and pick it up there. It's available today on Amazon.
That's great. And what I'll do is include a link to the to to the sites in the show notes, so listeners can then go and take a look at the book.
If you go onto the APress website, which is www.apress.com, who are the publishers of the book, you can actually buy the electronic copy of the book and download it for about $17.
Oh, that's pretty good, because you can store it then, and you can then take that with you on the go and store it on your home server and read it wherever you are and you've got an internet connection.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a great idea for a book, and having done a book myself now, I have utmost respect for anybody that writes books now, having realised how much time it takes to put in, that I think anybody that should read a book now should read each page at least twice.
The only problem is, if they read the book, they notice how much you might have missed out. So
yeah, so not read it too hard, but spend a long time reading it. It is a really time-consuming thing, but it's great to write a product that you're really enthused about and you're passionate about, and it obviously is something that you've enjoyed doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, out of all the books I've written, this is the one that's actually been the most fun, because it's not just a product that's got some features that I do like. It's actually a very, very cool product. It works really, really well. And it's just one of those things that personally I'm using all the time, and not just used to either to write the book or certain features. I mean, I love my Windows Media Center. I've written a couple of books on it, and I use it all the time. But I don't use all of the features of it. There are certain features that I think, I'm not really that fussed about using that. I'll just stick with my DVD player, for example. But with Windows Home Server, pretty much everything that's in there is usable, and you just find yourself using it all the time without even realizing it.
But that's the one thing that I like about mine is, really, since I've installed the final sort of release version, I don't actually touch it. I haven't got a keyboard or a mouse plugged into it. It just chugs away, does what it needs. The network health is a handy way of nagging you to go and fix things that you need to address. But main benefit for me is, Microsoft talk about backup guilt. You know, that's gone for me now, and I'm happy to know that everything is backed up and across all the machines, and I don't have to worry that, you know, you have to go and need to kick a backup off or whatever. It's just all done automatically.
Absolutely. It's very simple to use, and you can just say the backup guilt was gone, because once you've configured it and set it up, you just don't need to forget about it. All you've got to make sure to do is whatever time period you've selected for your backups, and it is completely configurable, that your machines are on.
Well, that's great. Well, many thanks for your time today. I do like talking Windows Home Server, and it does fit nicely with the Media Center world. So I do appreciate taking the time, and good luck with the book.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
Thanks to Andrew. And to win a copy of Andrew's book, all you've got to do is email me, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, with your location, and I'll pick a winner out at random. I'll give you the winner for that in a couple of weeks. So please keep the email coming in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Have a play with Media Center Health Monitor. Don't forget the forums, Facebook, and real world features. And I'll see you next week. Bye.